Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and happy Friday. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
We talked about food safety.
We sure did.
And how a whole framework for food safety came from the space program.
Yeah, I had not realized how involved Pillsbury was in all of this, which is like significantly involved.
Yeah, there were several companies that were involved in one way or another with making food for the space program. But like when it came to the development of HACCP, Pillsbury is the one that was the biggest player. Their work on things like microbiology and controlling microbial stuff was also connected to their being able to sell shelf-stable dough for people to cook at home. So they, like, there was stuff about their business that made sense as a potential partner for NASA to send stuff into space. We didn't get into a lot about the crumbliness factor of the food because that was fairly easily solved and also not really related to the food safety aspect of it. But I hadn't really thought about the part of, like, if you send a protein bar into space, it's going to live through a whole lot of vibrations and jostling and stuff during the liftoff and all of that. And then they weren't really sure, like, how would a crumbly bar type thing, would it just come apart in zero gravity? Like, we need to make sure that we don't wind up with little bits of food stuck in the instrument panels. And it had not entirely occurred to me that, like, anybody would kind of say, is this food just going to come apart at the seams in outer space?
Do you remember a while back, I think maybe before we were doing this show, when you were site director for How Stuff Works and I was the tech editor, us getting into a discussion about a paper on fractals and food safety?
No.
And how, I think there had been maybe an NPR piece about the space program and them talking about food safety, and specifically one of the astronauts really wanted, because they'll take astronaut requests of, like, what food would you love to have, and they'll try to make a space safe version, and one of the astronauts had wanted barbecue, and like how tricky that was. And I think I ended up pitching an article on fractals because of it.
That's cool.
Which we did. And it was many moons ago, so I would not expect you to remember it. But I always think about it when I eat barbecue now, which I don't do very often, but sometimes.
I do love barbecue.
There have been some interesting papers on that.
Yeah.
like fractal analysis and food structure. And just to, in case anybody doesn't see the connection there, right? Like fractals measure these repeating patterns in anything, but when applied to food, you're thinking about things like surface area, because the more surface area food has, the more points it has where it can become somehow a growth point for something yucky that you don't want in your person. And so something like barbecue, even if you have like a clump of it, say the size of a golf ball, because of all the little ridges of pieces sticking out, it has tons more surface area than that same clump of golf ball if it's like a clean scoop of mashed potatoes. So that's, we had a big discussion about it many literally probably 12 and a half years ago, maybe. Maybe longer.
So long. Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in a household where there was always a focus on food safety. Like we grew pretty much all of our vegetables, and there was a whole like freezing, canning, drying process all summer and into the fall to like preserve all of this food. And there was like just a lot of my mom being very careful to can things in a way to prevent us from getting botulism from it, like that kind of stuff. And then when we were kids, my brother got salmonella, not from something he ate. We pinpointed the likely cause as a turtle that he was playing with in the creek behind my parents' or my grandparents' house, and then like not thoroughly enough washing his hands afterward before we ate. And none of the rest of the family got it. It was only my brother. And after that, potential sources of salmonella were like
lockdown.
Like previously, like even with there just being a lot of focus on making things, making sure things were cooked thoroughly and the like their correct steps to can things. We were allowed to do things like lick the beaters after the cake got mixed. But that was no more of the licking the beaters after
that.
At the time, my mom's thought process was the egg, because eggs are a potential source of salmonella. Flour, actually, is a thing that in more recent years, people have become aware of different things that can contaminate flour. We said this a little bit in the show, but like so many of the big outbreaks now have nothing to do with meat or chicken or eggs or the things that people have thought of as like the big sources of foodborne illness for a long time. It's cantaloupe and spinach and vegan crumbles. My goodness.
I have a question for you, because I know you are, I would rate you as very keenly aware at all times about food safety.
Yeah.
In a way that like I'm a little more cavalier, which isn't to say that I'm like, yeah, dirt's great, but I recognize that there are things I cannot control. And so part of me is like, I'm not going to get too hung up on this because I wake up with a cat sitting on my face half the time. Like I can't get too precious about certain things, but I do wonder what your position is on flips, by which I mean, in case anybody doesn't know, a cocktail made with a whole egg in it.
Yeah. I don't drink them very often just because the texture of them is a little not my favorite, but I am less concerned about them because, as I understand it, the alcohol in them makes it a little bit safer.
Right.
And there's a lot of stuff that to me is like a risk analysis, right? Like I do eat sushi, even though sushi is a higher risk food, because I like get it from restaurants where I trust that they are taking the appropriate precautions and buying sushi grade fish and that kind of thing. But like, I also, if I get a burger in a restaurant, I always order the burger medium well, because that's like the most safe temperature. And that was the case for all of us in the 2 years of my career that I wrote about food safety for my job. I worked in this creative department of this company that sold cleaning and sanitation supplies. So all of our whole jobs was about like cleaning product labeling and writing and designing newsletters to send to restaurants and grocery stores about keeping things clean and sanitary. And so when all of us went out to eat as a group, often somebody was like checking ahead of time on the website to be like, what is the sanitation grade of the restaurant? And then all of us always were ordering our burgers medium well. It's one of those things where, you know, is it 2 decades later almost? It's like it's I'm probably more likely to get food poisoning from the salad than right. from the burger because requirements on the meat handling have become a lot strict, and in some ways, like the produce has lagged behind a little bit.
I am a rare meat eater.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm that person that loves a blue steak.
Oh, steak is different to me because it's the exterior of the steak that's the bigger risk.
Right.
It's when you get all the ground meat ground up together that's
I also love a rare burger, but I upgraded to medium rare because it made Brian so nervous all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Also, just for clarity on the flip thing, in case anybody doesn't know, a flip involves a whole egg and some sweetener usually. It's different than if you get a drink made with egg white foam, which just the white. And those are usually like I know people that will do an egg white drink and will not do a flip because they get just the whole egg makes them a little more nervous. Just in case anyone was like, wait,
what am I doing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually a little. Oh, I love a little cognac flip.
Ooh,
that's a great way to spend your evening. They're easy to make. They're really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I know some bars have switched over to doing pasteurized egg white, like the pre-packaged. You have to shake those a lot harder, though, to get the level of froth that you would get from if you just separated a fresh egg yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big thing. Sorry, I'm always talking about cocktails. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I
often laugh, and I bet you cringe when you see, like, on social media, there will be those, like, threads going around about, you know, when you walk into a restaurant where they kind of yell at you and their food safety grade is like a C, that it's going to be the best meal of your life. And that is often very delicious. It's true. But I also am keenly aware of their safety grades in restaurants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, not a perfect system, but also, no. I, you know, if I walk into a place and the grade's a C, I'm like, yikes, I'm probably leaving unless there's no other option.
Right. See, I know you don't watch Bob's Burgers, but there's a whole health inspector through line on that show.
Yeah.
That you might find hilarious.
There was a restaurant when I was living in Atlanta.
Oh, I know what this is, I think.
Oh, I don't know if you do. It was a place that I had eaten a lot, and it was like their grades were always, you know, pretty good. And then they like straight up failed a health inspection. And then after that, it was like high A every time. And I was like, I actually have more confidence in that restaurant because somebody messed up and they fixed the problem and now it's a priority.
Is that, without naming names, because I don't want to, was that a sushi place?
It was.
Okay. It was exactly what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember that being very scandalous because it was a sushi place. Everyone, I think that we both knew, would like, that was one of the favorite sushi places.
Yeah.
And then they had, it was like dramatic the way that thing rippled through Atlanta because a lot of people love to eat there.
Right.
And like you said, whatever it was, they were either having a really awful day or had like a really awful, you know, one thing or like an employee that was not being careful.
Yeah.
And then that was not the case anymore ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. When it comes to a raw thing like sushi, like I like feeling safe eating it, knowing that I'm taking a risk by eating it.
Yeah. I also didn't realize how recent a lot of these regulations and laws and guidelines were.
Yeah.
Right. Like at one point we're talking about like a 1996 piece of legislation. I'm like, I got married that year. That's not that far back.
Yeah.
This is all pretty recent.
And I remember when the Jack in the Box outbreak happened. And it wasn't the only big outbreak connected to like a restaurant chain that happened right around that time. But like, it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. That was like, I was in college at that point. I did not live anywhere near where the outbreak was actually happening. But like, even in we did not have social media. We only kind of had the internet. We had all heard about the outbreak. Like, it was a whole big thing and people were very upset, like, because people want to be able to eat food that doesn't make them sick.
Right. Or worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that strain of E. coli can indeed kill people. It's very dangerous.
Also, this is why I trust no soup.
Yeah.
I don't eat soup.
No.
Almost ever. I will occasionally myself make a creamy chowder when I'm craving it. But that's it. I'll never order it in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Not a soup gal.
Yeah. It's a thing that I think about a lot. Occasionally, Patrick and I have been traveling somewhere. And I'll be like, oh, I think I'll get the sushi. And I'm like, why would you eat in an unknown to us sushi restaurant while we are on a trip?
Right.
At like an airport like this. That is like not the risk that I am okay with taking. But, you know, ordering it from the restaurant where we eat at all the time, that's different.
It was exactly travel where my beloved said to me, please stop ordering your burgers as rare as you'll go. That was how I would be, as rare as you'll go. And he was like, this makes me nervous when we travel, because if you get sick, we're in rough shape.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. A lot of my stuff is also making sure as much as possible that anything I make for someone else is not going to make them sick.
Right. That's like the time I become the most anal retentive about cleanliness and safety I will ever be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If I'm like sauteing some stuff for myself, I'm a little more sloppy jalopy. But if it's like someone else is coming or I'm baking forget it. I become really, really like, put the cats away. Like, My cats don't go on the counters, but just in walking around the house, they're
sure.
little fuzz, you know, hair, yeah. cat hair gets in the air. No, we sequester them. We air vacuum the whole area and then I bake.
My cats are not supposed to be on the counters, but I sure do sometimes hear the sound of a cat jumping down from something in the vicinity of the kitchen.
I think I can count on one hand the number of times our current crop has ever been on a counter. And now they're all old enough that they're like, too high. Nah. They don't want to jump up there.
Yeah. Now folks know so much about our food practices and cats.
My distrust of soup.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
On the show this week, we talked about Louis Wayne and Louis Wayne's cat pictures.
We sure did.
I love all of them. I love the cat pictures. I love the realistic cats. I love the cats in human clothes. I love the vivid landscapes that some people thought were like not as good quality as his earlier work. I think they're great. I love the kaleidoscope cats. Of course, in any person's artwork that spans through the late 19th and early 20th century, there's stuff that's very dated or insensitive by today's standards. With that caveat, boy, I just like spent a lot of time looking at Louis Wayne cat pictures.
I love the one that I think it's just called A Cat's Birthday Party, and it's a bunch of cats holding champagne coupes, and they all look so happy, and they're wearing little collars, like human, you know, like a shirt collar.
Oh, fun.
I love that one. At one point we were talking and I was trying to madly write down some notes because the Madame Tabby project that he worked on and that story, it wasn't until I had read this outline and I wasn't familiar with that work, but it wasn't until we were saying the words that I was like, this sounds a lot like the plot of the Studio Ghibli film, The Cat Returns, which has some significant differences, but I really think that had to have been an influence on that film, which is quite lovely. And there is a king of cats, which is pretty great, who is this giant, fat, roly-eyed Persian. But that plot is not so different in terms of being allowed to go to the kingdom of cats.
Yeah.
And what that means.
I've seen that movie. It's been a very long time.
I love it.
One of the things about Louis Wain is that it's tricky to pin down information specifically about his life. There is one biography that I know of that was written in the 60s that I had to get an out-of-print copy from a university art library to be able to read it for this. And so, like, getting specific detail and stuff is hard. And as with many things, the specific detail may indeed exist somewhere in the UK in somebody's attic or an archive or, you know, old hospital records or whatever. But, like, I just don't have access to them. But so much of his life has become, I think, not necessarily by his own doing, just embellished to make it be more about cats. Or embellished to kind of romanticize the idea of, like, his mental state. One of the things that I didn't really get into is there is a newspaper article about him that was published in the U.S. that's just got a bunch of stuff in it that is totally made up. And it has this whole section about which hand he was using to draw with. And the writer implies that he was drawing like negative subjects with his left hand. Like, he would draw the bad cats with the left hand and the good cats with the right hand. Like,
all
no
cats
evidence.
Are good, first of all.
Yeah, agreed. They're all good and terrible is how I feel sometimes.
Yes. Oh, I always say, like, rest in peace, Mr. Burns was the best worst cat I ever knew. Right? He was terrible, and I adored him.
I will often say of mine, you are so good and so bad. So anyway, like, there's just stuff that's completely made up that seems to be part of the Louis Wain mythology. Also, when I started working on this, mentally pronounced his name as Louis because it is spelled L-O-U-I-S. And as a person living in the United States, everybody that I've known whose name is spelled L-O-U-I-S has pronounced it Louis. And if they went by Louis, that was like a nickname.
Right.
Spelled L-O-U-I-E.
Right. It's one of those things where if someone goes by Louis, people will be like, is someone in your family Cajun? I'm not even kidding. It happens in the South all the time.
And so that's the thing. Like, if somebody had French ancestry or if we were, like, saying an anglicized version of a French name, I would, L-O-U-I-S would be Louis. I never realized that a lot of people in the UK have the name spelled L-O-U-I-S pronounced as though it is spelled L-O-U-I-E. And I had that dawning revelation while trying to confirm after having watched that movie that came out, which is streaming on, I think, Amazon Prime here, having watched that movie and been like, they just called him Louis the whole time. Was that his nickname? And I, like, went down this whole rabbit hole and was like, oh no, a lot of people in the UK spell their name like this and pronounce it this way. And that, I don't know. I never, maybe because I'm not like a British royal family aficionado, because there are also Louis in the British royal family who it's spelled Louis and pronounced Louis.
Well, the thing, too, in the U.S., right, if you're going to go by Louis, often that S is replaced with an E.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So, we just would never. They are two different names in the U.S., is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Pretty clearly, they're two different names.
Yeah, we have people like Louis Armstrong that's usually spelled with an S, but then I'm like, in my head, that Louis was a nickname.
Yeah.
And, like,
I don't
Louis
know.
Was his full name. I don't, It's this is my whole weird rabbit hole that I went down in this episode. I looked at cat pictures and I thought about how to say Louis or Louis.
Now, I have always wondered because I have had like a passing knowledge of him, you know, not somebody I had studied a lot, but it always struck me as odd that people would talk about the progression of his art style and the stuff he was doing that was a little more experimental mm-hmm. as so surprising and unusual a development in his later life. Mm-hmm. One, because part of me is like, all artists experiment and evolve, but that's one thing. But the other is, have these people never looked at his ceramics? Because those cats are freaky deaky looking.
Yeah, they are. I love them.
I mean, like, they're really cool, but they don't look like his early illustrations either.
Yeah, no.
They look completely cubist and geometric and really, really... They have a very, I don't know any way to describe them other than saying they have a very specific style that could be aligned with many other art styles, but they don't look like the cute ceramic kitty figurines you might be thinking of at all.
No. And apparently they are very rare, which does kind of suggest that maybe there was a shipment of them that got destroyed, but no record of what ship they might have been on. Relatively recently, like within the last 10 or 20 years, there was a sudden influx of them showing up at auction to the point that people were like, I think these have to be counterfeit. Like, this is too many of these to have suddenly showed up on the market. Anyway, I think they're great.
They're very fun. They're very futurist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm also thinking of, there's one of his pieces... I don't know what it's called. I have seen it listed as like the cat's nightmare or something like that. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's a kitty in bed and there are a million owls on the bed just staring at him.
And all the owls just staring at the cat. Yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so fun. Kitties.
This has been like sitting around on my to-do list for a while as... Louis Wayne's cat pictures, like not just the person, but also like these pictures, so many pictures of cats.
Yeah.
Tons of them.
I associate them with the place where I first saw them, which was cat shows.
Mm-hmm. So that makes sense.
I think about them in that very specific, wonderful and odd environment where everyone knows who Louis Wayne is, of course. and it brings me delight.
Yeah. Because he didn't copyright any, even if he had copyrighted all of his art at this point, most of it would probably be in the public domain in most places. So there's a ton of it online that you can just look at. If you just Google Louis Wayne, a lot of the stuff that's going to come up first is going to be the kaleidoscope cats from later in his life, just because there's been so much writing on them, but just there's lots and lots of them to look at. And so... Since Friday, if your weekend's coming up, maybe you can spend your weekend doing a deep dive into cat pictures.
That sounds great.
If it's not your weekend and you want to look at some cat pictures, I hope you can find a minute to do it. We will be back for the Saturday Classic tomorrow. We will have a brand new episode on Monday. And if you haven't, you can subscribe to our show on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you like to get your podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.